only $9 a piece and can be ordered by calling 814-827-4946. That's 814-827-4946. Or visit davis-products.com. That's davis-products.com.
You're listening to GCN.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at the Genesis Communication Network, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Christian civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, today they're going to be the views of our good friend Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief, and he's going to bring us up to date on what's really going on in the world. Joel, so good to have you with us this afternoon.
Thank you. It's good to be with you this first week in the new year, Dr. Stan.
So tell us what your view is on what's going on.
Well, I'll just brief you on some of the stories I'm working on for this week's World Affairs Brief. I had talked a couple of weeks ago about the Interior Department firing one of the major whistleblowers who had been part of the audit committee that was auditing oil and gas leases that major corporations lease from the U.S. government. This is a major source of income for the U.S. government, and so it's important that those oil and gas leases are paid based upon actual oil and gas taken out of the ground. These watchdogs there at the in the audit committee of the Interior Department found that the major oil companies were in arrears to the tune of billions of dollars. And when they attempted to get some reaction from the upper officials in the Interior Department to, in essence, demand payment for these back or these unpaid or royalties, the Interior Department refused. Finally, these investigators went public and as whistleblowers and filed suit in federal court to force their own employers, the Interior Department. For this, they were fired. And so we have a major Interior Department scandal going on. But what we found out now is that part of the reason why this is happening is that almost all of the major Interior Department inspectors and managers that have to do with cash royalties, in fact, have either worked for major oil companies. And that's why they were hired into this, into the Interior Department. Or if they haven't, they almost certainly go and work for the oil companies after they leave the Interior Department service. So the Interior Department apparently is riddled with people who got their jobs because they were close to the oil industry and could be expected to tilt every decision accordingly. So this is very telling about the insider relationships between big government and big corporations.
And we see that with the FDA and the pharmaceutical industry. Government, Thomas Paine said it best, government, you know, at its best is a necessary evil, and at its worst, why, you know, it becomes tyrannical.
Very true. A very interesting article came out in the Army Times. They've taken a poll, and more troops now than ever unhappy with Bush's course in Iraq, and especially those that have been to Iraq. Troops are increasingly pessimistic about the chances for victory, according to the Military Times poll. That's a poll that was actually taken in both the Army Times and Navy Times, as well as Air Force Times. In essence, they said that 83% of the respondents in 2004 thought success in Iraq was likely. In 2006, only 35% of the military members polled this year said they approved of the way Bush is handling the war, and only 42% said that it was likely that we would have any kind of success at all. So the people and the troops on the ground are turning increasingly negative, almost to the same degree that U.S. citizens are who haven't been there. The basic reason, they're seeing more and more casualties and fatalities and less progress.
And I think that the men are doing the very, very best job that they can. But if you don't have adequate troops, if you, you know, your government is doing everything they can not to win the war, if your leaders are stirring up this conflict between the Sunnis and the Shias, refuse to partition the country, they're doing everything wrong, and they're smart people. They wouldn't be making that many mistakes by mistake.
Very true.
According to the American Diabetes Association, more than 18 million people in the U.S. have diabetes. Most people with diabetes have risk factors such as obesity, high blood pressure, and cholesterol, which increase their risk for heart disease. For example, more than 65% of people with diabetes die from heart disease or stroke. Finding out you or your loved ones have diabetes can be scary. This is why, as your trusted online partner in health, we are committed to bringing you products that help you make informed decisions about your health. At researchherbs.com, you can learn more about GlucoCare, a highly effective and safe natural herbal supplement formulated specifically to help maintain optimal blood sugar levels. As with all products featured on researchherbs.com, GlucoCare is the result of several years of rigorous development and is backed by numerous clinical trials and experimental studies. Visit us online at researchherbs.com or call 1-800-845-3841 to learn more. That's 1-800-845-3841.
The war on terrorism, will it be fought overseas or will it affect us here at home? If you are like most folks, you want to be prepared but can't afford an underground shelter. So what do you do? Did you know that you can use your home as a shelter against fallout and biological or chemical attacks? With a little know-how, it's not that difficult. Sheltering in place, surviving acts of terrorism from biological, chemical, and radioactive fallout, developed by Wayne LeBaron, a health physicist who has served as a specialist in environmental health, communicable diseases, and has worked as a nuclear specialist for the U.S. government, gives you easy-to-follow video instructions and walks you step-by-step through the process of preparing your home as a shelter. Get this critical video every American needs for only $29 plus shipping. Order by calling New Millennium today at 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438. Or order on the web at BerkeyWater.com.
Attention, attention everyone. A brand new invention just released. It's called WristEase, the new patented portable ergonomic wrist support. WristEase comforts your wrists from the sometimes painful tasks of typing, writing, using a mouse, or adding machine. Unlike most conventional wrist pads that are either attached to a mouse pad or lay flat in front of your keyboard, WristEase is totally portable and ideal for laptop users and technicians who are constantly on the go. WristEase is perfect for children doing homework or playing video games. WristEase provides the proper comfort and support for all ages and makes a great stocking stuffer. Honest, WristEase provides comfort for victims of carpal tunnel syndrome and other repetitive injuries. You can order WristEase now at WristEase.com. That's WristEase, WristEase, WristEase.com. Once again, WristEase.com.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at the Genesis Communication Network, our guest is Joel Skousen. So, Joel, pick the story up.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what's going on in Iraq. I want to talk about some of the potential problems with the very quick way in which Saddam Hussein was killed and whether or not this was, in fact, Saddam Hussein. There's a lot of things up in the air about these things, but generally the big story that I'm hoping will break before I go to press on Friday is that it looks like from leaks coming out of the White House, and you know these leaks are always carefully planned by the government to try to prep the way so that the talk shows on television and radio can have plenty to talk about. But it's apparent that George Bush is going to come out in this speech and give a central theme about more sacrifice in Iraq, announcing an increase in U.S. troop increases for security purposes. Now, this is different than what the ISG, the Iraq Study Group, was proposing, that they have a temporary surge in troops to help with more training. And the problem with this, of course, the whole training scenario just isn't working. I mean, people don't come back from their monthly sabbatical. They get a week out of every 3 weeks off, and so they just don't come back. And no matter how many trainers you have, it's very difficult to get Iraqis, you know, to do this. One of the problems with training that has been criticized strongly is that we're simply training, as many people have pointed out, people to be more effective killers of their fellow Sunnis or Shiites when they get out of the military or when they quit the military. And believe me, over 50% of everyone who's trained by the U.S. military quits the military and goes to work in the insurgency or doesn't come back in some other way. But now the Bush administration is preparing to apparently say that we're going to use an increase in troops for security purposes, to promise that we can solve the security problem. This is going to take a long time to do, if it happens at all, which I doubt. But what's more interesting, as Paul Craig Roberts pointed out yesterday, that the source of this plan apparently goes back to General Jack Keane, retired General Jack Keane, and Frederick Kagan of the American Enterprise Institute. Now, the AEI is a neocon stronghold, so it looks as if these private individuals working for the American Enterprise Institute have a direct pipeline to the White House, and they're writing the script for the next Bush announcement on Iraq.
So should we be really surprised by that?
No, not at all, Dr. Stan. You know, my basic take on this is that the United States, from a globalist perspective, and it's the globalists that are secretly controlling the Bush administration. Bush, as we've discussed before, is really just a script reader. But what's going on is that they're attempting to antagonize the world by continual intervention in the Middle East, and this is a script for more intervention and more antagonism in the Middle East. What happened with Saddam Hussein is also very much has to do with antagonism of the civil war that's happening. Here we have a very quick, kind of a kangaroo court, as Robert Fisk says, in the rush to hang Saddam Hussein. The verdict wasn't dry for a couple of days when the Supreme Court of Iraq ruled it legal and demanded that it be carried out quickly. The U.S. transferred, there were several rumors floating around about Saddam Hussein going to be hanged within a couple of weeks, and then it switched to Sunday, and then all of a sudden on Friday night it was announced it was coming off Saturday morning early, and Saturday happened to be the Muslim holiday of Eid, E-I-D, which is a very powerful Muslim holiday celebrating peace. And many Muslims were very, very upset that Saddam Hussein was killed on one of the Muslim holy days. And what's worse, of course, the major manager in charge of working for the Iraqi government in charge of the hanging used his cell phone camera under video mode to record the entire thing, and so that was leaked to the Internet. And I, for one, don't think this was an accidental leak. I mean, one person's cell phone is extremely private, and you have a video of that, and that's not about to get out unless that person spread that thing far and wide and allowed it to be leaked onto the Internet. What this means is that major elements within the Maliki government are attempting to continue to provoke Sunni unrest and Sunni civil war. And that's exactly what they're doing. We saw in this video several people involved in the hanging, standing around and chanting in front of Saddam Hussein, Muqtada, Muqtada, for Muqtada al-Sadr, and essentially taunting him right up to the very day that he died. So this was a problem. Why did the United States turn over to the Iraqis so quickly, Saddam Hussein? They claimed, and there was a leak also coming out of the White House saying that the U.S. tried to stop this. Well, you know, when they have custody of Saddam Hussein, how can they say that they tried to stop this? They didn't want it to happen so precipitously. If, in fact, they had custody, they could have stopped by simply not handing him over. Now, they claim, of course, that we had to honor the sovereignty of Iraq. Well, they certainly don't honor the sovereignty of Iraq and any other issues they want to take control of. So I'm not buying the U.S. excuse in this. Now, going to the larger question of why was the hanging done so soon, I think there was a provocation to be able to get it moved up onto the holy day of Eid. But there's also several articles out. One of the best that's come out is by Juan Cole, which has the whole history in detail of the U.S. dealings, CIA dealings with Saddam Hussein, through the Iran, first of all, through the overthrow of the Iraqi military government by the CIA, of which Saddam Hussein was part of, then in the Iran-Iraq war, where the United States provided chemical weapons for Saddam. This is found on www.juancole.com. Now, I might warn your audience that this is done from a leftist perspective. Juan Cole is an arch-leftist, and he does have good information about this, but it's done from an insider's point of view, from a leftist point of view, who sees no evil in the governments who were pro-communist. The Communist Party became very big in Iraq, and the vacuum created, and the Ba'ath Party started at the same time, a radical socialist party who was competing with the communists, but both very much on the left. And so you have to read through his bias toward the left, where the communists essentially were the friends of the people in Iraq, according to Juan Cole. But there's a lot of good basic information on Juan Cole, For Whom the Bell Tolls article on juancole.com. Robert Perry also had a major piece detailing the what the U.S. wanted to silence Saddam Hussein, and that is all of the insider dealings that Saddam Hussein had with the CIA, especially with Donald Rumsfeld, in providing them the chemical weapons. And this, of course, is very embarrassing for the Bush administration and for the globalists to run it, because it shows very conclusively that this was one of the best enemies money could buy, as you say, Dr. Stan.
Well, I think the other thing is, of course, that by our rights, he should have been tried by the International Court, where he could have at least gotten a fair trial. I don't think anybody feels this was a fair trial. Not that he isn't a criminal. Not that I think that he probably doesn't deserve to be executed. But he would have had an opportunity to bring out, you know, his dealings with the CIA and with the Bush administration, with the Reagan administration, you know, and the billions of dollars that were lent to him intensely so we could wage that war against Iran, and the fact that we knew, you know, he was using the poison gas on the Kurds, and we still backed him. That is the information they could not let the American people see or hear, and that's why I think that they refused to allow an international trial that they couldn't control, and that's why I think they wanted to get him killed as soon as possible. They want to cover this up so we just will never stop and question, you know, how much involvement was there by the CIA in bringing Saddam Hussein to power and keeping Saddam Hussein in power right up until the very end.
Well, you know, there's still questions abound about whether or not this really was Saddam Hussein, or whether or not the U.S. gave safe passage to Saddam Hussein, being one of his client people. The jury's out on that. I've looked at the websites, and I'll be publishing that in my World Affairs brief this Friday. There are certain websites that have all the photographs between the various doubles of Saddam Hussein and the real Saddam Hussein, and there is significant difference that you can see in these photographs. And so it's just really hard to know. One thing we do know, though, is that the capture of Saddam Hussein as portrayed by the United States was a fraud. This was a staged capture. This was a dry well that they had put him down into and they tapped up. This was not a hidey hole. This was something where he was sat in there, captured whoever they had and brought out of that hole. Even American military Marines have said and leaked to the public now that they found Saddam Hussein in a house the day prior to that, and that he actually fired upon them, and so there was some resistance. So there's lots of stories going on about that. What I'm basically making the case is, because I haven't come to any firm conclusions myself on these, it's very, very difficult now after his death. But there's a couple of things. One, this phony capture scenario that they had. And the other thing that was very phony is the fact that when you have certified doubles of Saddam Hussein and you're supposedly having a manhunt on for this man for a year or so, where is the news of the United States capturing these doubles? I mean, you should have had four or five false reportings of Saddam Hussein being captured and then saying, no, this actually isn't him, this is his double. But there was nothing. For a manhunt that went on for a year, and you don't catch any of these five or six people who look just like Saddam Hussein, very, very difficult to tell the difference. That just doesn't make sense. And it seems to indicate the U.S. really wasn't trying to find him until it became convenient. Whether they hung one of his doubles or whether or not they hung Saddam Hussein, I really don't know at this point. But it's one of those things that's going to be allowed to pass from the stage of history now, and we're probably never going to know for sure.
All right, we'll be back here in just a moment or two with our special guest this afternoon, Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief. And of course, then, of course, the question in the back of my mind, I'll have to admit, is did they really hang this man? Oh, we've got the pictures of it. We saw it on television. But does that mean it's real? I mean, can they create our reality? I quite frankly don't know what's going on. But then nobody really does, other than those on the inside.
Some people believe a group of wealthy men control political parties, the American media, and the wealth of our nation. Is this true? Dr. Stanley Monteith spent 40 years studying secret societies and subversive movements. He lived in Africa for 3 years, and when he returned home, he studied the writings of the men who shaped the modern world. His book, Brotherhood of Darkness, identifies the people who control the world and the organizations they created. Dr. Monteith exposes the movement behind Rhodes scholarships, the origin of the Council on Foreign Relations, and the myths surrounding communism. He discusses the goal of all covert organizations, so if you read Brotherhood of Darkness, you will learn a secret that has been passed down through the centuries. When you learn this secret, you will understand what the future holds and what you must do to help preserve our nation. Call and order your copy. 877-300-7645. Only $12.95. That's 877-300-7695.
The United States seems to be celebrating over its triumph of reducing government debt. But the truth be told, public and private debt increased to a record high in 1999, reaching a peak of $14.8 trillion, marking 10.57% annual increase, outpacing its previous 10 years. The U.S. economy receives its currency by taking on debt through private banking institution called the Federal Reserve System. In the year 2000, debt growth collapsed to only 4.5%. It's bad enough that the U.S. citizens is bound by debt in order to have commerce. However, shocking the economy with a reduction of this magnitude could wipe out years of growth in a stock portfolio. Before you make your next investment decision, get the cold hard facts. Call 1-800-686-2237 for your free report on the outstanding level of public and private debt. You must understand how recession and depression are driven by outstanding debt. Call 1-800-686-2237. That's 1-800-686-2237.
Hello, folks. Alex Jones here, introducing Prudent Places USA, an interactive CD book that is your premier resource for hard-to-find information. Find out about everything from job migration to evacuation information, such as major bridges in disrepair and FEMA evacuation time studies for coastal cities. Zero in on man-made disaster zones, environmental areas of concern, and natural disaster zones. Find out everything from where to get water in an emergency to geographic income levels, housing prices, complete with over 3 gigabytes of detailed information on the 3,000-plus counties in the U.S., full-color photographs, 550 high-resolution full-color maps, and detailed information and analysis that you need. Order Prudent Places USA now for only $29 plus shipping by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438 and tell them Alex Jones sent you. That's 888-803-4438 or order online at BerkeyWater.com.
It's a fact. You can legally eliminate credit card debt, which has been fraudulently created by the banks. Since its creation in 1913, the Federal Reserve has not been held responsible for its own debt. So why should you, the hardworking American, be harassed for yours? There's a double standard when it comes to being responsible for debt, and unlike the Federal Reserve, the people of this country can't print more money when needed. Day of Jubilee has created a successful program designed for people that want to stop harassing calls and threatening letters from bill collectors. We also do credit restoration. Join the thousands of Americans who now breathe a sigh of relief because they have legally eliminated their credit card debt instead of living each day in fear. It's time to turn your life around. Call Day of Jubilee, open 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Central Standard Time at 920-293-8024. That's 920-293-8024 and ask for Robert. Don't wait any longer to get your life back in order.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at the Genesis Communication Network. Our guest is Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief. And, Joel, pick up the story from there.
Well, let's see. We're talking about the Middle East. I'd like to comment a little bit about what is developing in Israel. First of all, the new General Secretary of the United Nations, Ban Ki-moon, stated that the Israeli-Palestinian issue was the core issue for solving all of the problems of the Middle East. Well, that doesn't give me much pause for optimism because, frankly, I don't believe the Israeli-Palestinian issue is ever going to be solved. But certainly his putting emphasis on it is going to indicate that the globalists are going to put a major new effort into trying to get the Israeli government to go ahead with the sellout of Israeli security. And part of that, you know, it involves deals that they make with the Palestinian Authority under the guise that they're going to make progress towards peace. Israel caved in this week to the kidnapping of the soldier Sergeant Shalit. You know, they had stated when he was kidnapped that they would never, and they always say this, that they're never going to exchange hostages for a kidnapper because that only invites more kidnapping, and it does. But in fact, they had a secret deal, as I told in the World Affairs Brief several months ago. I said there's always a secret deal that Israel will release prisoners on a free will gesture, that there's no connection between the Palestinians releasing this particular soldier. And such a free will gesture of a couple hundred prisoners was scheduled, and then Israel decided not to do that. In fact, they came right out and said that they weren't going to do that unless the soldier was released. And so then Prime Minister or President Abbas, Mahmoud Abbas, came out and said that that was a violation of the agreement that they had with Israel. In essence, this has all come out in the open, that in fact there were secret agreements and that the secret agreement was so-called violated. And it's probably because the Olmert government in Israel knew that Hamas was in fact not going to release Shalit even if they released these token prisoners. In fact, Hamas was holding out for some 600 prisoners. I mean, this is just ludicrous when you think about it on its face, that you're trading 600 terrorists and otherwise and people involved in terrorism in the Palestinian armed forces that have been jailed by the Israelis, and you're going to release all of those for one soldier. And think of the, you know, the damage that they can do in terms of Israeli terrorists when you do that. But that's the way that Israel operates. They claim that they never will exchange hostages, but they end up doing so. So lately, Israel has come to an agreement where they're openly admitting they're going to do a direct transfer of release of 450 prisoners for Sergeant Shalit. But the deal still isn't going through. Believe it or not, they're arguing now over the names of the 400. The Palestinians want all of the top terrorist leaders that are in jail, and Israel wants to give them the least obnoxious of the 450 prisoners. So we haven't seen the last of this. It may not, you know, come off. But what I'm basically complaining about is this continual compromising, this continual lying to their people, proclaiming that they're going to act on principle, and they never do act on principle. They act according to the globalist game plan of essentially promising the Israeli people that we're going to trade land for peace. They never get peace, and they keep giving away land. Now, they say this is occupied land, this doesn't belong to the Israelis, but we've got to remember that the Israelis have been attacked under four major wars, actually five, depending on how you count them, all started by the Arabs. And they've lost every single time, and sometimes just barely. If it weren't for, you know, intervention, they really were caught flat-footed in the 73 war, for example. But in any case, you can't very well claim that you want everything to go back to zero when you've made five unprovoked attacks upon Israel. Now, certainly Israel has not treated many of the Palestinians correctly either. They have been especially now that after the Lebanon War, where the Israelis went after civilian targets in Lebanon, and it appears that that's what they're aiming for now. Everything that Israel does seems to go along with the globalist agenda of increasing the antagonization in the Middle East. General Oded Tirad said, for example, an American strike in Iran is essential for our existence in Israel. We must help Bush paved the way by lobbying the Democratic Party and this is a real problem.
We'll be right back in just a moment with Joel Skousen.
Order a copy of this show for your friends and family at GCNLive.com or call 877-300-7645. Hey folks, Alex Jones here with an important question. When was the last time you used pure soap? I mean the hard-to-find kind that's all natural and not full of corrosive toxins and chemicals and detergents that just dry out your skin and have been connected to very serious health problems. Let me tell you something about the Calbin Pure Soap Company. There's a 100% unconditional guarantee on all their wonderful products. They're all natural, they're triple concentrated, they're factory direct, factory owned, and operated since 1947. Earth-friendly pure soaps for bathing, laundry, and kitchen. Try pure soap once and I'll guarantee you'll never use anything else. Now for the first time, Calbin Pure Soap is available factory direct to you and your family. Save up to 85% off supermarket and retail store prices. Call today for a Calbin Soap catalog at 1-800-340-7091. That's 1-800-340-7091 or on the web at calbinpuresoap.com.
More than 700 chemicals have been found in our drinking water. And did you know that you can have greater exposure to these chemicals by taking hot showers than when you drink the water? That's because many chemicals are inhaled when they evaporate, and others are absorbed through the skin. The KDF shower filter is designed to reduce chlorine, lead, mercury, and iron, and it inhibits the growth of bacteria, mold, algae, and fungus in your shower. The media is non-toxic, environmentally sound, and is recyclable. The KDF shower filter will typically last 10,000 gallons or 1 year, whichever comes first. Hospitals, restaurants, and water treatment facilities use this media to reduce chlorine, iron, heavy metals, and bacteria. What about you? Order your KDF shower filter, normally $49, for our special price of only $35, a $14 savings. Call now to order at 1-888-803-4438. Order today and save $14 by calling 1-888-803-4438.
Did you ever wonder how an opera singer that hits a high note is able to shatter a wine glass? Well, the glass has a natural resonance. If the resonant frequency force making the glass vibrate is big enough, the size of the vibration will become so large that the glass shatters. Using a similar principle, Royal Raymond Rife discovered that disease organisms can be destroyed using different resonant frequencies. The BioSolutions frequency instrument uses the same technology for relief or elimination of pain and disease conditions with no side effects. The 2006 BioSolutions Plus is the easiest to operate frequency instrument ever developed. Its easy reference guide will allow you to begin using the instrument within minutes. Simple step-by-step instructions using pictures are easy to follow. Customer satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. Don't just treat symptoms. Eliminate the cause. For more information, call BioSolutions toll-free 1-866-885-6625. That's 1-866-885-6625. 1-866-885-6625.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here, our guest is Joel Skousen, and of course we were talking about this Israeli corporal. I can remember, though, when he was kidnapped, and at the time while the soldiers who were with him wanted to go after him, I mean, they weren't allowed to fire, they weren't allowed to go back at that time and try to get him back again, and they were furious, but their officers refused to let them try to, take this corporal back, and now they're going to give 450 terrorists in exchange for the one corporal? There's something wrong about this story, and I think that anybody who remembers what happened initially and then see what's going on now, it's almost as if there are people with the Israeli Defense Force who are intentionally trying to help the Palestinian terrorists. But before we go on, Joel, why don't you get your telephone number out and your website so people can find out how to get the World Affairs Brief?
Well, I don't know what you did ever since our Saturday interview on the big picture. I've been inundated with requests for the review copies of the big picture brief that we put out last week.
I'm so glad for that.
So I've never had that kind of response before. Normally we have, you know, half a dozen or so request sample briefs when we put out this, but it's just literally been overwhelming, the response. So we must have said something that was of interest to them. You know, for those that aren't aware, I have a general theory about why and what the globalists are up to in controlling the Bush administration and in doing this continual antagonism in the Middle East, whether it's in Afghanistan, Iraq, or coming up in Iran. And you can see a lot of this on my website, which is www.worldaffairsbrief.com. That's written as one word, worldaffairsbrief.com. On the right-hand column, you have something called Strategic Threats of the Coming Decade. It's that basic piece that was written around the turn of the decade, the turn of the century, that I update every year with the latest information, and timing is where I think the globalists are heading in taking us into a World War III scenario. So if anybody wants copies of that big issue or the big picture issue where I give a big picture of where I think all of this is going in the next 10 years, they can email me at editor@worldaffairsbrief.com. That's editor@worldaffairsbrief.com. And I'll be happy to send you a free complimentary issue. The World Affairs Brief, you know, there's lots of news that my staff posts every day on the website. All of the day's news, the best stories get posted, and you could read those directly. What I put out in the World Affairs Brief on Fridays is my commentary of the news, adding insights about what the mainstream news does not put out, and also trying to clarify sometimes internet stories that may or may not be totally accurate. And so, you know, those sample briefs, there is a modest subscription for the World Affairs Brief, and if you want samples of that to make a decision about whether or not you'd like to subscribe, you can email me for sample briefs, including this upcoming one at editor@worldaffairsbrief.
Well, I will tell you that from my point of view, I always look forward to getting it. Always has a very insightful commentary. All right, well, now, what's the next item we're going to cover?
Well, we're talking still about the Israeli provocation. The Israelis are really gearing up to get the United States to do this attack first, and the United States is trying to get the Israelis to do the attack first. No one seems to want to take the first step here. General Tira said, we need to do this in order to turn the Iranian issue to a bipartisan one and unrelated to the Iraq failure. He's talking about lobbying the Democratic Party so that it doesn't look like it's coming through the Republicans. The commentator, Kurt Nimmo, says, it's refreshing in a sadistic sort of way, so a little translation is required here. First, Tira, a former IDF chief artillery officer, is cut to the chase, not belaboring us with the sort of platitudes uttered by Benjamin Netanyahu or Ehud Olmert, the current prime minister. In order for Israel to exist, they say, it is required the United States attack Iran and kick off World War III, or as the neocons call it, World War IV. Well, it's my opinion that this attack on Iran is coming. It's going to come this year in 2007, and it is not intended to kick off World War III. It is more provocation that's necessary to continue to inflame the world opinion against the bully of the world. This inflammation or antagonization of the world is necessary for Russia and China, the real axis of evil, to be able to justify the preemptive nuclear strike that they have long been planning for the West. That's my general theory that I talk about in last week's brief on the big picture and how that is progressing, what Russia and China are doing to prepare for war. And most interesting is my theory about why the United States intelligence community is covering for Russia and China. I mean, they know much more even about Russian war preparations than I know. And if I, as a private intelligence analyst, can know about Yamato Mountain and all of the secret factories that they're putting into there, how they're planning on using biological, chemical, as well as nuclear weapons on the United States, then certainly they know that. The big question is, why aren't they warning the American people? Why is the entire focus on Iran's the problem when they know that Iran is a piker compared to Russia and China, who have thousands of nuclear weapons and missiles to deliver them and are preparing to strike the West? And they're not giving any warning about that whatsoever.
Well, that, of course, is the $48,000 question, and I really believe that there's going to be terrible devastation in the United States. But I think that, you know, if we were really prepared for, you know, that the Russians would think twice. If we had an effective anti-ballistic missile system, if we had a defective shelter system so that they really couldn't threaten a large part of our population. But we at least do not admit to any of these things, so it's almost as if, well, certainly with our statement that we will absorb the first strike, we will not even retaliate until the first strike has taken out most of our nuclear weapons. I mean, the Soviets would be foolish not to attack us. But, of course, I believe, as you do, that this is a trap, that our leaders are not foolish, that they do have another plan, which, of course, they're not about to tell us and certainly not going to tell the Russians.
Well, that's interesting. There's a lot of complexity to this, and which I talk about in this piece on my website called Strategic Threats of the Coming Decade. You know, when you've mentioned Presidential Decision Directive 60, signed by President Clinton in 1997 and written by the anti-nuclear lobby, who leaked the story, by the way, to the press. They were so proud of having a part of this PDD 60. But Presidential Decision Directive 60 instructs our military not to rely on launch on warning, but in essence to absorb a nuclear first strike and then retaliate. And as General Butch Neal, retired from the Marine Corps, who was active duty then, said, retaliate with what? You know, we have maybe half of our submarines out because we have a secret agreement with the Russians that we are going to keep, so that the Russians feel secure, that we're going to keep half of our nuclear submarines in port at any one time to them as a show of good faith that they can be easily targeted by the Russians so that they don't feel insecure in the world. Isn't that magnanimous of our leaders? So that's all that we would have if you allow a nuclear first strike. By advertising this to the world, it essentially telegraphs the message that the Russians are going to get a freebie, and they better throw it all in one shot at the United States.
And, of course, the other thing is we've done away with our Minuteman missiles. We've done, I guess it's the MX missiles, right?
Right.
We've dismantled all of these. Yeah, I mean, they were the major means of retaliation that we had, and we've dismantled all of them. Why would you do something like that? You know, do we honestly think that the Soviets are not in full military production for war? And all you need to do is read the Russian monitor that I get on a regular basis, and they're developing new intercontinental ballistic missiles and mobile intercontinental ballistic missiles all the time.
That's right, and they're also modifying the Topol M to be a shorter version, and they're installing it in their strategic ballistic missile submarines, of which they're still building. They are dismantling some of the older decrepit attack and missile submarines, and those warheads are being reprocessed by American taxpayer money and given back to the Russians to install on new missiles, all in the name of helping our ally in the war on terror. But obviously, if I know the Russians are cheating, the U.S. knows that the Russians are cheating. We dismantled our MX, the 50 missiles that the U.S. or that the Russians truly feared because they had the powerful warheads that were capable of penetrating their deepest bunkers. And we dismantled those based upon a treaty, a strategic arms limitation treaty signed by President Bush and Vladimir Putin. And it wasn't but more than about 6 months after that was signed that Putin said, this was some 3 years ago, that they were not going to abide by the treaty. They were going to keep the SS-18s because they still needed them for strategic deterrence. And the U.S. said nothing. They continued to dismantle our MX missiles. Today they are dismantled, and just 3 months ago the Russians repeated that they still weren't going to carry forward their part of the agreement. Nevertheless, the CIA continues to list Russia as being in total compliance with all international treaties on disarmament. I mean, this is just ludicrous.
Unless
our government continues to do this.
Unless there is another agenda out there, and I think that that's really what's so important. If you look at it logically, it's totally illogical. If you look at it from the point of view that we're doing everything we can to encourage the Soviets to strike at us, because there is another plan that nobody knows about, you know, and I'm firmly convinced that we have a space-based laser weapons that can knock out a lot of the incoming missiles. But, you know, we're certainly never going to tell the American people about that. We're certainly never going to tell the Russians. People say, how could they have that? Look, they were able to keep the Manhattan Project completely secret here in the United States from the American people, from everybody. You know, and nobody had any idea about the atom bomb until one day we woke up and we saw the headlines, why Americans dropped secret weapon on the Japanese at Hiroshima.
Well, the Russians certainly knew about the Manhattan Project. They had two spies in there.
Oh, sure, but I'm talking about the average American.
And, of course, you see, the globalists have been at this even before the Roosevelt administration, who had several what appeared to be communists in the administration. It turned out to be, I think, people like Alger Hiss were actually globalists fronting as if they were friendly to the communists, and they were, in fact, shoving as much nuclear material. We gave Russia its first nuclear-enriched uranium so that it could set off its bomb. We gave them the plans that they weren't able to steal from the Manhattan Project. All of it came through the White House, and as you know, Major Jordan, out of that Montana Air Base, you know, intercepted a lot of these suitcases full of these nuclear plans. When he opened them up, at the great protest of the Russians, they, you know, warned him, "We're going to call the White House on this." And sure enough, when Major Jordan called the White House, they told him to give them to the Russians and let them have them.
That was Harry Hopkins,
and to be silent about it.
And that was Harry Hopkins, the right-hand man to President Roosevelt, who the Verona Files now, many years later, demonstrate that he was a Soviet agent. So, I mean, they had infiltrated every aspect of our society, but they never could have done that without help from very, very powerful forces.
Well, my point is, it's hard to tell whether or not Harry Hopkins and Alger Hiss were actually Soviet agents or double agents. That is, globalists on one side facilitating the Russians and playing like they were Russian agents at the other side.
I think you're absolutely right.
And so we'll never really know that for sure, but I do suspect, given the amount of protection and defense that the establishment has always given Alger Hiss, I mean, literally, they just never gave up on the guy. He was handsome. He was charismatic. He developed the UN Charter. He was the big boy. And when he got shut down in the perjury case with Richard Nixon as the prosecuting attorney, you know, they never forgave Richard Nixon for that. And I think that's the real reason why they cut his throat during the Watergate thing and undermined him, was because they wanted to teach him a lesson. And Richard Nixon spent the rest of his life trying to bootlick back up to the globalists to let him back into the club.
And they did at the very end. They actually did to the very end.
He was bootlicking and trying to do every globalist thing right up to the very end. It was very, very sad.
Well, when you go back and you read the Alger Hiss trial, and there was John Foster Dulles, there was Dean Acheson, there were all of these people testifying in favor of Alger Hiss. He obviously, it wasn't because he was a communist agent. That's why I think you're right, Joel.
That's right. I think he was a globalist, part of their team, and acting on behalf of the communists. And one thing that your audience has to understand is that the U.S. has been facilitating communist revolutions ever since the very beginning. They were the ones who financed the 1917 revolution. They're the ones who kept Lenin in Europe in fancy digs during the period when he was waiting for his chance to go in there. They, of course, undermined the Kerensky government. They undermined the White Russians when they were trying to defend against the Reds. George Catlett Marshall, of course, undermined Chiang Kai-shek, cut off all his military aid to help Mao get installed as the communist in China. They undermined governments in Cambodia, Laos, Vietnam, all of those things. We know a lot of people don't understand that the CIA actually shipped arms and gave advisors to Castro to help overthrow Batista.
Sure.
And we have that, the ambassador to the United States to Cuba at that time was very much aware of what the State Department was doing and tried to blow the whistle, and he was really shut down. He wrote a book in concert with another person called Dagger in the Heart, Story of the Betrayal of Cuba, and it's out of print now, but it's a dramatic book, much like Somoza's book on Nicaragua Betrayed, how the State Department and Jack Anderson and other media people crucified him on the cross of public opinion and helped install the Sandinistas, and then played the other side of the game after the Sandinistas were installed and worked the Iran-Contra deal, where they traded weapons to the Iranians for money to finance the Contras, and then they traded weapons to the Contras to get drugs in return, of which they shipped into Mena, Arkansas, which enriched Bill Clinton and all his cronies as government of Arkansas. And then Bill Clinton suddenly comes up as the preferred candidate for President of the United States. I mean, this is all very, very much connected.
Well, actually, we have a videotape. We call it the World Revolution. And there you'll see my interview with Ambassador Earl Smith. Remember Ambassador Earl Smith?
Yeah.
He was the ambassador to Cuba. He will tell you how we intentionally brought Fidel Castro to power. And, you know, we filmed this back in 1980. And actually, we took a film crew down to Palm Beach, Florida, before Ambassador Smith expired. So there's really nothing like that. He just talks about how we knew Fidel Castro was a communist. President Eisenhower knew Fidel Castro was a communist. We intensely brought him to power. He was ordered to go to see Batista and tell him he would leave Cuba the next day. And when Batista left, Fidel Castro never won the revolution. He never won any battles. We gave him Cuba. And that's why, of course, in my estimation, why David Rockefeller's daughter is such a good friend of Fidel Castro. He's never been a real enemy of the United States, but we can't let the American people know that. And once again, one of the finest enemies money could buy.
And Americans don't realize that President Kennedy signed a secret deal with Khrushchev at the end of the Cuban Missile Crisis to agree that if Russia removed their missiles, that they would have hands off on Castro and give him a carte blanche. He would never be overthrown. And the U.S. has been true to that agreement, even though this is what's interesting, even though the supposed Soviet Union is dead and there's no contract anymore, because the parties to that contract, they have still kept Castro from being overthrown. That's because they have this ulterior agenda, and the agenda is you foment communist revolutions because it helps break down the social order in the world, the economic order, and prepares governments that can be overthrown and replaced with a globalist candidate. Just as you had your pro-communist government in Mexico, you overthrew that with Vicente Fox, who was a globalist, and you follow along with Calderon, which is another globalist, and they've done that in many other countries as well.
Well, we're out of time, Joe. It's always a pleasure. We'll look forward to talking to you next week.
Nice to be with you, Dr. Steve.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our Founding Fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Hello, folks. This is Alex Jones introducing you to the incredible Berkey Solar Charger, your source for free solar electricity. This portable system is the size of a book when folded and small enough to fit into a briefcase, handbag, or glove compartment. The Berkey Solar Charger has been designed to power the Berkey Lights LED lamps as well as other applications such as mobile phones, radios, digital cameras, and PDAs when electricity is not available. Its multi-voltage capabilities, multiple adapters, and rechargeable batteries provide for a flexible source of auxiliary backup power. Simply place the Berkey Solar Charger in the sun, plug in your application, and you have power. Disconnect your application, the system op.
A new four-tape set on the Military Commissions Act. We've got a new four-tape set on globalism. We've got new four-tape sets on immigration. And you have to understand that we're not trying to seal the borders. We're not trying to stop the immigration. They're never going to build a 700-mile fence down there. Or if they do, they'll be sure that it's not going to be effective. And we're not going to bring our boys home from Iraq. They're going to stay there. And the war is going to continue. And we're going from crisis to crisis. But the biggest crisis is going to be here in America. And that's why they passed the Military Commissions Act and the John Warner Defense Authorization Act, and that's why you need the new four-tape set. On the Military Commission Act, it's available from Radio Liberty. This is why you need to get our four-tape set on concentration camps, or better still, get the concentration camp special. See the videos, see the pictures of it, see the congressional hearings, the information you're never going to get through regular channels. And then please pray for America. Pray for revival, pray for our leaders and ministers, but Pray for my ministry of Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. We're on the front lines of this battle. If you want a free catalog, health catalog, emergency food catalog, give us a call, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we are under attack today.
Now you can bring Berkey Purification Power anywhere with the Sport.
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Christian civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views and the views of our guest. And today our special guest is Dr. Russell Blaylock, who's an old friend. He is a neurosurgeon, practiced in Jackson, Mississippi for many years. And in recent years, he's been retired. I shouldn't say he's retired, because he's spending a lot of time doing a lot of the fundamental research that the average doctor doesn't have the time to do, and going into the scientific literature that the average doctor doesn't have a chance to read, and coming up with all sorts of facts that are really necessary for your health, especially in times such as we live in. Now, when I went to medical school, we learned about goiter. Goiters were produced by iodine deficiency, and at one time they were very, very prevalent in the area surrounding the Great Lakes and in that basin, because there really was very little iodine there. And then, of course, they came up with public health measures to provide the iodine so that there was not iodine deficiency in the American people. And they put iodine in the milk. They put iodine in the wheat flour that was used to make our bread. They put it in our salt, and so we're not seeing a great deal of iodine deficiency in America, or if we did, we didn't recognize it. And then about 20 years or so ago, we began to notice that there was more or less of an epidemic of a fibrocystic disease of the women's breasts. Maybe 30 years ago it began, and an increase in breast carcinoma among women. And then, of course, so many people are hypothyroid. And how many of our listening audience out there are taking some thyroid extract because the doctor has said, you're hypothyroid, we've got to treat you? But what nobody has told you is, for some strange reason, they've taken the iodine out of our milk. They've taken the iodine out of our wheat flour, and they've substituted bromide. And they've taken iodine out of a great deal of our salt. Now, you can get iodized salt, but you're going to have to look for it. I think most people think that the salt is iodized. Only probably less than half of it is iodized now. And we have to ask why they're doing that. And, well, Dr. Blaylock's going to address that. And then why they're taking iodine out of our diet and adding fluoride, which competes with iodine for position in the thyroid, why they're putting that in our drinking water. So, Russell, you go ahead and explain to our listeners why these things are happening, or at least what the implications are for our health.
Well, we've looked at quite a few things that iodine are related to in terms of human health. And the things that sort of stand out are breast cancer increase, hypothyroidism, that is a low-functioning thyroid gland, increase in hardening of the arteries, what's called atherosclerosis, and associated heart attacks and strokes. As you said, the fibrocystic breast disease, hypertension, and fibromyalgia. These are some of the things that just are rather glaring in our medical literature. For instance, if we look at the first one, breast cancer, we knew that 30 years ago the incidence of breast cancer in women was about 1 in 20 over their lifetime. Now it's 1 in 7. The difference in those 30 years is that women now are consuming about half the amount of iodine as they did 30 years ago. So as we look at the function of the breast, we see that the breast has special mechanisms to concentrate iodine from the blood into the breast tissue, particularly the milk ducts. So iodine is very important to the health and functioning of the breast, just like it is in other organs. But the breast seems to be special. No one's really looked at the prostate gland, because the prostate cancers, for instance, seem to parallel the breast cancer in women.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment, Russell. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest this afternoon is Dr. Russell Blaylock, who practiced a neurosurgery in Jackson, Mississippi for 21 years, and he actually now is spending full time researching and writing, and we like to have him on Radio Liberty because he certainly is right on top of so many of the things that you're not going to hear elsewhere. He writes a newsletter, incidentally. We'll tell you later how to get it, and I want you to know I look forward to getting that newsletter every month, and we've been getting it for 3 years now, an excellent newsletter. You will certainly want to consider getting it. But Dr. Blaylock was talking about iodine. And, of course, iodine seems to have a great deal to do with breast carcinoma, the fibromyalgia of the breast, with the function of the thyroid, with the function of hardening of the arteries and heart attacks and fibromyalgia and hypertension. And what most people don't understand is that certainly many years ago, 40 years ago when I went through medical school, 50 years ago, they added iodine to all of the salt. They don't anymore. Only about half the salt is iodized. It used to be in our bread. They've taken it out of the bread. They used to be in our milk, and they've taken it out of our milk. And Dr. Blaylock is simply pointing out that iodine is very essential for the function of the breast. And when you have a deficiency in iodine, of course, it affects the breast, and, well, we know that the incidence of cancer of the breast has over doubled in this period when they've been taking the iodine out of our diet. So you picked the story there.
Right. During this period, they've doubled the incidence of breast cancer, and we've halved the intake of iodine in women, so women are consuming a lot less. Well, it came as a surprise to me that they weren't iodizing all of the salt, because when I grew up, it was a law that all salt had to be iodized. So I was inadvertently buying salt without iodine in it without knowing it, and suddenly discovered it. Then I found out you had to look for the iodized salt. About 45% of American households are now using iodine-free salt without knowing it, from a recent survey. The other thing that's happened has been in the medical profession an obsession with reducing salt intake, particularly after age 40. So more and more people are on low-salt diets or no-salt diets, so even if they have the iodized salt, they're not taking in enough of it. And a recent survey showed that they've reduced about salt intake about 65%. So we've really dramatically reduced our iodine intake in this country, and we're seeing increase in all of these diseases like hypertension and fibrocystic breast disease.
Hold that thought right there, and be back in just a moment with all of our... Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly Russell is saying that only about 45% of our population is eating salt, and they think that there's iodine in it. There isn't. And then, of course, the doctors are telling people, oh, you shouldn't be eating salt, so even if you do have iodized salt, you're not getting very much of it because you're being told you should not use your salt. So you picked the story up there, Russell.
Right, and one of the disorders we're seeing is fibrocystic breast disease. For instance, in 1920, when people were consuming more iodine, the incidence of that disorder is only 3% in women. Now, 90% of women suffer from fibrocystic breast disease. A study that was done in the Canadian Journal of Surgery showed that you could correct this condition, this breast inflammation, in 70% of women merely by giving them a high dose of iodine. And that this disorder is very rare in the Japanese population, and that's because they consume considerably more iodine than we do. We consume a fraction of 1 milligram, whereas the Japanese are consuming about 12 milligrams a day. They get it through chlorella and kelp and red algae, which they mix with their food, and it has high iodine contents. So we have that evidence. And then when they looked at some experimental studies in mice, they exposed the female mice to a very powerful cancer-causing substance that causes breast cancer in mice. And they found that if they took a second group of mice, exposed them to this cancer-causing chemical, but they gave them iodine, there was a dramatic reduction in breast cancer. So we have both human experience in the reduction of breast cancer by iodine supplementation and in the animal experiments. So that's really closed in on the idea that iodine is extremely important in preventing breast disease and breast cancer. We see the same thing for thyroid cancers. We know that low iodine in goiter, your thyroid gland begins to enlarge and produces a benign tumor-like condition of the thyroid gland, but you can also develop cancers of the thyroid gland with this hypothyroidism. Now, when we look at some of the other diseases like heart attacks and strokes, we see similar type findings. If you look at the human population, one of the studies that was done was in Finland, and they know that in eastern Finland, heart disease is much less common than in western Finland. They really couldn't find any factors to explain that, but what they did find is that in western Finland, there's a much lower intake of iodine. And when they looked at people who have goiter, that is a low-functioning thyroid gland, the incidence of heart attack was about 3.5 times higher. And then they did a study on women and found out that women who even had moderately low thyroid function increased their risk of dying of a heart attack 3.1 times. So these are rather substantial increases in heart attack and stroke risk just because the thyroid is not functioning at optimal levels. Now, to check this and see, well, let's take it to the laboratory and see what happens in laboratory animals. So they took rabbits and they fed them a high-fat diet and produced this atherosclerosis and occlusion of their blood vessels. But then they took a second group of rabbits, did the very same thing, same high-fat diet, but in that diet they added iodine. And what they found was that there was a dramatic reduction in hardening of the arteries in the rabbit. So we have both human evidence and experimental animal evidence that iodine could play a big role in preventing hardening of the arteries and heart attack risk and stroke risk. When we look at hypertension, high blood pressure, which is also connected to heart attacks and particularly strokes, we find that iodine can lower blood pressure. And in fact, back in the 30s and 40s, iodine was used to lower blood pressure because of its ability to increase the flow through the vessel, dilate the vessel, and bring down the pressure. But doctors today are not taught that. They're not aware of this earlier research, and it was rather extensive. You know, this was carried out in tens of thousands of people. That iodine is very important in preventing hypertension. So we have this group of diseases that are all showing pretty much the same connection to iodine. We also see it in things like fibromyalgia, which is a painful muscle condition. It can be quite debilitating. And the studies are showing that actually if you add iodine to the person's diet, a considerable number of them are cured or significantly made better from their fibromyalgia. And I had a case of my own saw of a person that was virtually crippled, just terrible pains, and put them on iodine, and within 24 hours the pains have gone away, and it's been over a year and they're still completely pain-free as long as they take their iodine. So we're seeing some of these conditions that are increasing drastically, like fibrocystic breast disease, fibromyalgia, breast cancer, that may have a simple solution, and that is increase iodine intake. Our iodine intake, even with iodized salt, is pretty low compared to Japanese. That'll give you about 150 to 200 micrograms of iodine. The studies are indicating that to prevent these other diseases like breast cancer, it'll take higher doses, as much as a milligram, which is at least four or five times higher than the maximum dose the average American is taking in.
Well, no, it's very interesting. When I was, of course, in my training, I trained a lot of times at Catholic hospitals, and every Friday, why, first you had fish. I mean, we used to call the Catholics mackerel snappers because they had fish on Fridays, but we ate the fish, and it was good for you. And then, of course, along came the Pope John Paul the 23rd, and they did away with all those old customs, and so people don't eat as much fish as they used to. And then we're told, oh, you shouldn't be allowing a fish because there's mercury in it, and you don't want to get the mercury, and so you don't eat the fish. But then where are you going to get your iodine? You're not getting out of your salt, and you're not getting out of your bread and out of your milk where it used to be. And the question is, why would they have taken it out? Because this was one of the great public health successes of all time. And why would they take the iodine out and add fluoride to our drinking water, at least your hydrofluorosilicic acid, which, does exactly the opposite as far as protection is concerned. And in communities where, the original community where they did the study on the fluoride, I think it was Newburgh, New York, comparing it with one other, what they never told anybody was not only, of course, the girls started their menarche much earlier, but there was about twice as much heart disease among the people in the community that had the heart disease, that had the fluoride in the drinking waters, as not. So why would they do something that stupid unintentionally? It just doesn't make sense.
Well, and the really shocking thing was that they had sufficient evidence at the time, back in the 20s and 30s, that fluoride was extremely harmful. They knew that it caused damage to DNA. In fact, this experiment was actually done by Procter & Gamble Company, people who made the first fluoridated toothpaste. They had demonstrated that it damaged the DNA. The AMA even came out with a proclamation saying that fluoride is a serious cytoplasmic cell poison and should not be added to the water. Even the American Dental Association initially said that this was well demonstrated to be a powerful cell poison and should not be added to the water. Within months of these declarations by the AMA and ADA, they changed course and said, oh, we need to make sure everyone is drinking water with fluorine in it. And so this began the great fluoride experiment on people. But as I say, we had considerable evidence that fluoride was toxic to cells all over the body. They knew it from the very beginning. Now, since that time, we have accumulated enormous evidence that fluoride not only is very toxic to virtually every cell in the body, but that it accumulates. And we know from toxicology that a poison that accumulates is infinitely more dangerous than one that's quickly eliminated from the body. Things like lead and mercury and fluoride accumulate in tissues. And that is, if you're drinking even a small amount every day, it begins to accumulate in certain tissues in very high concentrations. After 10, 20, 30 years, you have concentrations that everybody agrees is enormously toxic. Some of the studies that were done back in the 50s and 60s demonstrated that the thyroid gland concentrates more fluoride than virtually any organ in the body, and that these levels are so high it interferes with the function of the gland so that you become hypothyroid. And so it's a good evidence now that the vast number of cases of hypothyroidism are caused by this policy of water fluoridation.
And, of course, the fluoride actually comes from the same, it's very, very similar. It's a halogen derivative, you know, that actually competes then with the iodine for the position of the thyroid, and of course when they're competing and there's low iodine and high fluoride, why of course you're not getting a proper thyroid function. And there's so much hypothyroidism today. I mean, we never saw that amount when I was going to medical school 50 years ago. So why do we see so much of it today, and why so many people on thyroid? And the studies show they're hypothyroid, and I believe they are hypothyroid. But nobody ever asked the question, why are they hypothyroid? We're going to be back here in just a couple of minutes with Dr. Russell Blaylock as we begin to explore this. And the thing is, ladies and gentlemen, there really are people out there who have a different worldview. I mean, you would not think that anybody would want to do anything that would harm the health of the American people. And yet, of course, we see so many things going on today. It's very difficult to explain them. And for years, they were telling us, oh, don't eat butter. Take those trans fats in. That's how you're going to protect yourself from arteriosclerosis. And suddenly they said, oh, don't drink the trans fats. They're going to give you arteriosclerosis. We're going to outlaw them. Well, were they wrong then? Well, I think that they were. Well, Russell, you go ahead and pick up the story.
Okay. Well, the thing that they discovered back in the 30s, back 1932, Dr. May did a series of experiments in which he took patients who had overactive thyroid, or hyperthyroidism, and he fed them special pills that had fluoride in it, and found out that he could cure most of those patients of their hyperthyroidism. That is, it was lowering the thyroid function. He studied over 800 patients and proved it. Well, it was so convincing, another physician back in 1937 took fluoride and combined it with an amino acid called tyrosine and found out that this 3-fluorotyrosine was even more powerful at suppressing thyroid function. Well, it was so impressive, the IG Farben company, which you may recognize as the people who made sarin gas used in the Holocaust, the IG Farben bought this patent for this 3-fluorotyrosine and produced a product called Pardenon, and it was used to treat hyperthyroidism. Well, they knew that if you combine fluoride with any organic molecule, it becomes a very powerful thyroid-suppressing compound. Well, interesting, now a lot of medications are just that. They're organic molecules that are fluorinated. For instance, Paxil, Prozac, many of your antibiotics, some of your anesthetic gases, they all are organic fluoridated compounds that were proven to be extremely powerful at suppressing the thyroid gland. Yet, if you look in the physician's desk reference or ask your physician, they've never heard of this. Yet it's in the medical literature. Now, one of the things they found about fluoride is that fluoride tends to bind with aluminum very easily. And when it forms this fluoroaluminum compound, it is enormously powerful at stimulating what's called G-protein. Well, G-proteins are stimulated in virtually all cancers. Makes them grow very fast. When we looked at, this is a study done in 2001, it's actually done by Japanese scientists, and they looked at the incidence of various cancers in fluorinated communities in the United States. They picked 9 different communities, some 21,000 people. And what they found was a significant increase in cancer in these communities of multiple types. They looked at some 36 different body sites. Found that about 23 of the body sites, there was increased cancer, particularly of the oral cavity, the pharynx, the colon, the breast, and multiple myeloma, lymphomas, certain types of leukemia. They were all increased, even brain tumors, tumors of the liver, the kidneys, the bladder, bones. All of these things were dramatically increased because of fluoridation of water. Yet they continue to push fluoridation of water. So in spite of all of these studies that go all the way back to the 1920s up to the present time, we continue to find more and more studies being published that are demonstrating that you're increasing some very serious diseases. It's been shown that if you already have cancer, fluoride in drinking water increases the growth of those cancers by 25%.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Blaylock was simply quoting a Japanese study that was done some years ago where they analyzed American communities. Now, we have to understand, Japan doesn't fluoridate their drinking water. Europe doesn't fluoridate their drinking water. They wouldn't consider it. They've tried it a few places and given it up. I think the only European country is 10% of one area of Great Britain is fluoridated, and part of Ireland is fluoridated, but none of the other European countries fluoridate their drinking water, and their dentition is just as good as ours, if not even better. But, of course, the Japanese, of course, who would never think of fluoridating their drinking water, did an analysis here in America, and they found there was a very definite relationship between certain types of cancers and water fluoridation. And then Dr. Blaylock was saying that actually they know that, you know, if you have fluoridated water and you already have a cancer, why it tends to grow much more rapidly. Would that be right, Russell?
That's right. It's a 25% increase in growth. Well, this Japanese study is confirmed by an earlier study in which they looked at 10 of the largest cities east of the Mississippi River, comparing them to 10 largest cities west of the Mississippi River. And they matched the cities according to every kind of factor you could imagine and looked at fluoridation effects. And what they found was that there was a 10% increase in cancer deaths when the cities were fluoridated. And this was comparing the cities before they had been fluoridated with afterwards and looking at all variables. So if you have 10% increased death from cancer, that means actually the incidence of total number of cancers is far higher than that, because most of those people aren't dying right away. So in both of these studies, one back in the 1960s, another at 2001, have confirmed the same thing, that fluoride is a powerful cancer-causing substance when added to drinking water and causes cancer of multiple organs, all the way from the brain and blood-forming organs to bones and liver, etc. It's particularly carcinogenic or cancer-causing in the oral cavity. So that when you're brushing your teeth, most people don't realize a tube of toothpaste contains 1,500 parts per million fluoride. Well, they only add one part per million to your water, and it's causing cancer. So when you brush your teeth with fluoridated toothbrush, you're probably getting 20 parts per million fluoride directly in these structures in your mouth. Well, one of the studies done at Battelle Research Institute, ordered by the Congress, demonstrated that it increased oral cancers anywhere from 33% to 50%. Well, oral cancers are one of the deadliest cancers. It's about a 50% mortality rate. And yet, that mortality rate has not changed over the last 30 years. We have found no effective way to control oral cancer. So we know that the fluoride at that high concentration, using mouthwashes and fluoride treatments and brushing your teeth with fluoridated toothpaste, dramatically increases your risk of developing cancer of the mouth and tongue and the upper esophagus, and that this is a highly incurable cancer in a lot of people. No one's telling people that. They're assuring them that all this is safe. Now, one of the connections also with fluoride as a toothpaste and mouthwash. Recent study has shown that it dramatically increases gingivitis and periodontal infectious disease, that is, infection around the gums and the teeth that results in a loss of teeth. Well, we know there is a very strong connection between chronic gingivitis and periodontal disease and heart attacks and strokes. In fact, that connection is far stronger than cholesterol. Yet, it has been proven now that fluoride dramatically increases that periodontal infection and makes it prolonged. So that is a connection to your heart attacks and strokes, as well as to your oral cancers. And nobody's talking about this to the general public. So to continue on, what they've also discovered is that fluoride dramatically reduces the amount of zinc in the tissues of the body, particularly the brain. Well, zinc is essential for all organs, but it's particularly essential for brain function. And when they fed fluoride to animals, they found a dramatic fall in brain zinc levels, which is really a great concern to me, because that can produce things like apprehension, irritability, mood changes, depression, exact type things that we're seeing in these fluoridation studies.
Well, of course, the things that there are so many hazardous things that are out there. But why would they be adding something that is an insecticide, a pesticide, something that is a deadly poison for human beings? Why would they be adding that to our water? Well, they say it is effective and safe. Well, it's neither effective nor is it safe, and we'll tell you where you can verify that a little later in our program. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Dr. Russell Blaylock, and we started out talking about iodine. In fact, that most people think that you're getting iodized salt when you buy your salt. We really haven't been worried about iodine because after it was all in our milk, it was in our bread, and it was in our salt, and they haven't told you. They took it out of the bread, and they put in bromide, and they took it out of the milk, and they took it out of about 45% of the salt. So the average individual, especially if he's following his doctor's orders and has cut back on the amount of salt he's using because it's bad for him, is not getting adequate iodine, to protect him. And iodine seems to have a very definite protection as far as cancer is concerned. At least they get a much lower incidence of cancer. And in Japanese people, where they have very low incidence of, or relatively low incidence of cancer of the prostate, relatively low incidence of cancer of the breast compared with the United States. How much of that is genetic? Russell, do we have any idea? And how much of it is related to iodine? What happens to the Japanese when they come to America? Do we know?
Well, yeah. I mean, once the Japanese change their diet, they develop the same disease that Americans do or anyone else does. We find this in all these epidemiologic studies. When Alaskans or people in Iceland that have low heart attack and stroke rates, when they move to the United States, and begin to consume our diet, they have the high incidence of breast cancer and strokes and heart attacks and arteriosclerosis and degenerative bone diseases and osteoporosis, just like we do. So what is proved is that this is not genetic. It's purely dietary. And that the protection to the Japanese population has always been they're good diet. They eat a lot of omega-3 fatty acids. They have high iodine intake. They eat the highest amount of fruits and vegetables of any population on Earth. And they have the least amount of bad fats in their diet. So they have a much healthier lifestyle than we do. But the Japanese living in the United States is eating cheeseburgers and going to McDonald's. They're obese. They're having all of these health problems and heart attacks and strokes just like everyone else.
All right, well, I think the plea that we have is learn about health. Russell Blaylock has a wonderful book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. My wife, who keeps it as sort of a Bible, it's got so much information in it. Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life by Dr. Russell Blaylock is a book you need to get, you need to read, and, of course, you need to understand that you can't look to the government to protect your health. Because if you do, you're going to end up just like the Japanese who moves to America. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dr. Russell Blaylock. And before we go on, Russell, I want you to, first of all, give your website and how people can get hold of your newsletter if they'd like to.
Okay, my website is www.russell, R-U-S-S-E-L-L, Blaylock, B-L-A-Y-L-O-C-K, MD.com. And you can get the newsletter at www.blaylockreport.com. blaylockreport.com.
And let me recommend that to you. That's www.blaylockreport.com. And it's really it's not that expensive, and it just comes once a month by email, a great source of great information. And I do want to mention that we do carry a DVD that Russell has put out, Nutrition and Behavior. It's a talkie game with all sorts of documentation, and you'll get the source of the information. But the relationship between nutrition and behavior is one of the most exciting things that actually, people with serious mental problems have had them really relieved, by changing their diet. And even criminal activity, people who are chronic alcoholics or using drugs and just couldn't control them while you change their diet. Even in the prisons, they found out that it had a direct effect on criminal activity and the number of criminals that came back into the prisons. In fact, the program was doing so good that they simply closed down the programs. After all, if you didn't have the criminal activity, how could you have all those prisons out there? The United States has more people in prisons per capita than any other nation in the world. And when they found out the difference between a proper diet and an improper diet dramatically increased the incidence of or decreased the incidence of criminal activity. What they did is they stopped the programs. A lot of things going on just don't seem to make sense, do they? Well, certainly we're talking about the deleterious effects of fluoridating the drinking water, and this has been known. Certainly, other countries refuse to fluoridate their drinking water. What they're doing is experimenting with the American people. They've been experimenting with them for 50 years. We have, in comparison with similar communities and similar people, similar age groups in England, almost twice the heart disease and almost twice the diabetes. And people scratch their heads and say, oh, shucks, why could that be? What's the difference? Are they eating essentially the same diet, smoking about the same amount, drinking about the same amount of liquor? But, of course, we have the advantage. We have fluoridated water, and we have much more heart disease and other diseases as well. But you pick up the story there, Russell.
Yeah, and beside the heart disease, there's another connection between fluoride that's particularly distressing, and that is the connection to Down syndrome. It's just a terrible thing to have a child that's mentally handicapped. But what they've discovered is that there's an increased incidence of Down syndrome in fluorinated communities. In fact, the measurement indicated that there's a 30% increase in the number of Down's children living in fluoridated communities when matched for all other possible variables. This study was done by a toxicologist who works with the advisory panel of the National Pure Water Association and analyzed the health statistics to come up with these figures. It's a very carefully done study. But previous studies had shown the same thing. Dr. Walbot, back in 1978, did a review of all studies, and he found the same thing, a link between fluoridation of water and Down syndrome increase. We can step back even further than that, go back to 1950s. A Dr. Rappaport had published studies showing that the incidence of Down syndrome was not only increased with fluoride being present in the water, but the age at which a woman gave birth to a Down syndrome baby was much younger if the water was fluorinated. So the presence of fluoride in the water was dramatically increasing it. We were always taught that Down syndrome occurred in women who were older when they first conceived the child. But now results are showing, that's not true at all. And his study carefully showed that the fluoride content in the water played a major role so that it could occur even in young women if they lived in an area where there was fluoride in the water.
Well, one of the interesting things is they say that over the last 30 years or so, why the testosterone level in males has fallen about 50%. Oh, shucks, we have no idea why the testosterone level in comparable ages of men has fallen 50% over the last 30 or 40 years. But, of course, what have they found out about the effect of water fluoridation on testosterone levels?
Well, a couple of interesting studies that they've done is one, they looked at humans, you know, the human studies. And they indeed found exactly what you said, that when you lived in fluoridated community, the males had lower production of testosterone. They also found they had lower sperm counts, that there was this significant effect on the ability of males to generate sperm. A recent study in England looking at some 16,000 people found that there's a 30% drop in their sperm production. And so they're concerned, is there some sort of toxin in the water? Well, they haven't really looked at the fluorinated community, but when we look in the United States, the study's been done here, that's exactly what we see. Now, they've done experiments in animals as well, and what the animal studies clearly show is that the fluoride inhibits all of the mechanisms the testes use to make sperm and testosterone, and that when you expose experimental animals to fluoride, their testosterone level falls, but it's, the decreased sperm is not just due to the testosterone, it's a direct poisoning of the cells that produce sperm. Which raises the concern about DNA damage to the sperm as well, which was demonstrated in the same study. Now, what they looked at the testes to see, well, what's going on in there that's producing this loss of sperm and loss of testosterone. And what they found is that there was a high generation of free radicals in the testes caused by the fluoride. Well, this is the same thing that was shown by Dr. Mullenix in the brain. The brain accumulates fluoride and produces high free radical generation, and that this is producing a loss of brain cells and brain connections. So we see a similar mechanism in different organs producing this, but if we continue this with the accumulation of fluoride in the testes, the question is this a sterilization program, very subtle, carried out?
Well, of course, one of the major thrusts of American public health is population control. Why, they wouldn't do this intentionally, would they? Ladies and gentlemen, I've got all sorts of documents talking about how they're going to put things into the water to control reproduction, after all. You know, and then we can always give people a Viagra, some other pill, when we knock down their testosterone, but they're not going to have so many babies. And aren't there too many people in the world? Wouldn't it be far better off if we could cut the population, cut it dramatically, and then, of course, there wouldn't be so many, we wouldn't be using so many of the natural resources, and we wouldn't need so much conservation. And people say this could not be going on. I would simply ask our listeners, check this out. Go to fluoridealert.org, fluoridealert.org on the Internet. Now, don't go to fluoridealert.net. Don't go to fluoridealert.com. Because they've surrounded this one website, fluoridealert.org, with ADA websites. Why? Because they don't want you to get the truth. Because you're not going to get it through the media. You're not going to get it from your doctor or dentist because they really don't know, and they've never heard a program like this. But you go to fluoridealert.org. It's put up by Dr. Paul Conant, a professor of chemistry, who's retired to spend full time trying to warn the American people you're being poisoned. Or go to the website put up by the union of the scientists and lawyers and the engineers who work for the Environmental Protection Agency in Washington, D.C., who are trying to tell you you're being published, poisoned. Their website is NTEU280.org. NTEU280.org. That's National Treasury Employees Union 280.org. Go to their website. See what they're trying to say, what they're trying to tell the members of Congress. But somebody must be opening the congressman's letters, because the congressmen don't know what we're telling you today. Check it out. Find out if it's true. Russell, how are we going to get people to understand the implications? Not only this, but what about the impact of water fluoridation on the brain, on the minds of our children? I mean, nobody would want to hurt our children, or would they?
Well, you can't come to any other conclusion. I mean, with the amount of scientific evidence that we have of harm, why would they continue to push this program? particularly with the recent demonstration that there is no reduction in cavities of putting fluoride in water. Even the ADA admits that. So that's irrefutable proof now that putting fluoride in water does not reduce cavities one bit. But there is evidence that it increases cavities. Now, you talk about these EPA experts. I know two of the top experts at the EPA personally and have spent many hours talking to them, Dr. Hersey and Dr. Bob Carton, both senior scientists at the EPA. The stories they tell about this cover-up make the hair stand up on the back of your neck. I mean, it's incredible the length they have gone to cover this up, to keep the public from knowing what these senior scientists at EPA know, and to keep the senior scientists quiet. We had one of the scientists, in fact, that he found out they had lied about a cancer study. And so he blew the whistle on them, and they fired him. He had been in the department over 20 years, was one of their most respected scientists. And he sued them, and they had to hire him back and pay him back pay because he proved that indeed they had lied about the cancer-causing effect of fluoride. Well, they had destroyed the documents, and they never were charged with destruction of evidence or anything else.
What about that recent study about the osteogenic sarcoma in 7-year-old boys, where they know it increases the incidence of this terrible, this horrible sarcoma? The only treatment for it is to cut off a little boy's leg. And they know this, and they actually suppress this back at Harvard. What's that story all about?
Well, what we had was a series of studies. One was, in fact, a court case that proved it increased bone cancer in young men. That lived in these fluoridated areas. In one place, one of the studies is as much as a six-fold increase in osteogenic sarcoma, which, as you know, is a highly malignant cancer. I'm sure you've treated quite a few of those as an orthopedic surgeon. And so they had all of these studies that were piling up showing that there's a tremendous increase in this type of tumor. Well, a study was done at Harvard which absolutely proved it and showed that if young boys are exposed to fluoride in the drinking water during a certain critical age, around 5 to 7 years of age, if they drank the water during that period of time, it increased their risk of developing this type of cancer dramatically. Well, they tried to cover this study up. They hid it. And this was a research program, actually, that had been done. The scientists involved, Elise Basson, tried to get this published. Well, her dissertation advisor, Dr. Chester Douglas at Harvard University, wouldn't let her publish it. Well, she published it anyway in a very prestigious cancer journal called Cancer Causes and Control, May 2006. So now, you know, the story is out. There's irrefutable proof that fluoridating water increases this horrible bone cancer in young men. And there's an investigation of this Dr. Douglas for him trying to cover this up. Well, it turned out that he was getting money from the fluoride companies. So this is an ongoing investigation. Now, as far as the proof goes, there's a scientist, Anna Stranica, who's a physiologist in Czechoslovakia that I work with. And we wrote a paper. I'm a co-author of a paper that she has published. And it's all the scientific studies that have ever been done on fluoride toxicity. And it is going to be, it's been accepted for the journal, Current Signal Transduction Therapy. And it is an 80-page article. I mean, it is a very large article that covers everything. I wrote the section on brain effects of fluoride. So this is going to be something hard for them to refute because this is a world-renowned physiologist, and several other world-renowned physiologists also co-authors on the paper, that are proving that fluoride is an powerful, powerful poison to cells, produces brain damage, lowers IQ, and increases Down syndrome, increases cancer risk, all of these things we've talked about. So it's going to be an irrefutable review of all the research that's been done to date.
And, of course, the trouble is that even though you get this into the scientific literature, it'll be totally ignored by the controlled medium, which, of course, keeps telling us, of course, that water fluoridation is both safe and effective. And it's a lie. And they've known it's a lie for a long period of time. And the most recent studies, even by the ADA and by the CDC, says it doesn't do any good to ingest fluoridated water. It only acts topically. So if it only acts topically, why are we putting it in the drinking water and ingesting it when there are obviously hazardous and deleterious effects? And then why are they cutting back on the iodine in our diet when iodine really is so necessary and seems to have a very palliative effect on cancer, and certainly it cuts down dramatically on the fibrocystic breast disease and so many of the other things that Dr. Baylock mentioned earlier during this discussion. So, and I think this is the thing, Russell. It seems so incongruous. Most people say it just couldn't be true.
Well, there's a new study that's just come out of India. You know, India has a real problem with high fluoride in some of their water. Well, there's a Nalco aluminum company in Angul, India. They have found that 90% of the villagers living around this aluminum factory, which emits fluoride into the atmosphere, 90% of the villagers are suffering from dementia. Out of 14,000 poisoned villagers, 5,000 have full-blown Alzheimer's disease. So this shows the immense toxicity of fluoride if it accumulates into high enough concentration. And of course, if you fluorinate the water, and you live there since you're a baby, you're going to reach those high levels.
And, of course, the fluoride and the aluminum work together. This is the thing. And, of course, when we see the marked increase in Alzheimer's disease, and some of the doctors I worked with, some of the doctors I practiced with and cared for, now there in custodial facilities, Alzheimer's disease, they're so forgetful. Sometimes they don't even know who they are. How could this be happening in America? Why is Alzheimer's disease increasing? Nobody wants to tell you why. Well, Russell, we got 3 minutes to wrap up the program here.
Well, I think I would reiterate what you've said. This is all very suspicious with the enormous amount of scientific literature we've had since the 30s, which has now grown to a huge proportion. There's no excuse for anyone fluoridating water, and the fact that they're pushing harder than ever not just to fluoridate your drinking water and the public water systems, but to fluoridate the bottled water as well. They don't want you to have any recourse to get away from this fluoridation. With that obsession and the money they're spending to do this, and the fact that ADA admits that it does not reduce cavities, there's no other reason for them to be doing this with this vigor except for some deleterious reason, reason to destroy the human health.
And, of course, at Walmart, my understanding is that a lot of the water at Walmart, you can get it with fluoride in it. Isn't that nice?
Well, they sell a fluoridated water for babies. They have a baby's picture on it. And mothers are, I've talked to I don't know how many mothers across the United States who their pediatrician tells them to put a fluoride tablet in the formula of their baby. Now, at the age of the brain formation, put fluoride in it is absolutely insane.
What it would do the most harm, and the doctor really doesn't know, and that's why
he doesn't know.
And that's why you out there listening audience need to check out, find out if it's true, and then of course protect your family and help us get the word out. Help us educate the doctors and the dentists. Do you think that there's any, you know, in the general medical community, is there any knowledge at all of the things we're talking about?
There's no evidence of it. You know, they're listening to the wrong people. And they just, what they're told is, well, those people are in the fringe. You really ought not listen to them. They don't realize these are some of the highest credentialed scientists in the world that are saying this. These aren't a bunch of nutcases. These are people that are high up in the research world who have done some very careful studies on this. This is all well demonstrated. It's not hypothesis. It's well proven.
And, of course, we're talking about the health of our families. We're talking about the health of our children. Who would want to harm the mind of a child? And yet, if you talk to the teachers today, and college instructors and high school teachers, they'll tell you, you know, the kids aren't as smart today as they used to be. Don't understand. They're just not able to learn. They're not able to concentrate as much as they used to. And, of course, you go into the areas with fluoridated communities, you have very, very few geniuses, because a lot of people of borderline intelligence, they know what they're doing. Russell, thanks very much. God bless.
Thank you. God bless you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and I hope that maybe you'll want to get this entire text of our conversation, because, of course, when we go to the breaks, we continue talking, and Dr. Blaylock has such a wealth of information. But we hope that you'll want to check us and try to prove us wrong. You go to fluoridealert.org, put up by Dr. Professor Paul Conant, a chemistry professor who's trying to tell people what's going on, but don't go to fluoridelight.net. Don't go to fluoridealert.com, because they've surrounded the website, hoping you'll go to the wrong website. The ADA has taken the other websites. Why? Because they've realized that if the American people realize that they've been intentionally harming their children, you'll be furious, and you won't trust your dentist anymore. And then he won't trust the ADA, and he might even drop his membership. And, of course, it's all about, well, part of it's about intentionally doing harm. There really are people in key positions in the AMA and the ADA and the CDC who want to do harm. I know, because I've been to the CDC. I've been in organized medicine. I fought these battles. And this is why I gave up the membership and went on the air. At least I can reach some people and warn you. We've got some great four-tape sets on water fluoridation. We've got a four-tape set, is your drinking water safe? We've got a four-tape set, it's time for the truth. We've got the book. The Fluoride Deception talks about how in Newburgh, New York, where they did the original studies on water fluoridation, they had twice as much heart disease. But they kept telling us, but look at how good those teeth are. And they didn't know why, of course, the girls were starting their menarche 9 months, 6 to 9 months earlier. But they assured us that it didn't do any harm. Well, of course, the fluoride concentrates in the pineal gland. In fact, you can go up on the Internet right now and Google in pineal gland and fluoridation. You'll find that it produces all sorts of problems with the pineal gland and sleeping and of course, with the normal menstrual cycle for women. And they know exactly what they're doing, but the biggest harm is they're destroying the mind of the children. You need to get my talk on the hidden agenda, and there's a syllabus that goes with it that has all of the documentation. That's the hidden agenda. And then, of course, you need to get the 2 4-tape sets we have on water fluoridation. You need to ask for the complete text of this talk we're given. And then, of course, you will be putting together a 4-tape set on iodine, because, of course, they've intentionally and maliciously and purposely taken the iodine out of our diet and substituted the fluoride, which is highly toxic. And what you don't understand is that they're not putting fluoride into your drinking water. They're putting hydrofluorosilicic acid, and whenever they put it in, it increases the lead level in the blood. And they've done studies with hundreds of thousands of children to show that. Not only that, but it doubles the, on average for white people, doubles the lead level, but for blacks, 6 times the blood level. And then we wonder why we see so much violence and crime in blacks and why they just can't learn anything. There's no sick level of lead in the blood. And if you're black and you're in an area with fluoridated water, your blood level of lead is 6 times what it should be, what it would be for the whites. So in non-fluoridated areas, for the average in non-fluoridated areas, why would anybody do that? Robert Master has done these studies, and I was just looking them up on the Internet. No question, they're real. You're not going to learn about this, though. You need to find out if we're telling you the truth, and if we are, then you've got to become involved. Because if they would do this to our children, what else are they doing? What else are they lying to us about? Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. On water fluoridation, the DVD, Is Your Drinking Water Safe? And Time for the Truth, the 2-4 tape sets, the book, The Fluoride Deception, and then, of course, the information that is available at in my Hidden Agenda talk, video talk, and in the Hidden Agenda syllabus. Get the scientific studies. They're there in the syllabus. Find out if it's really true. If it is, then join us in this this epic crusade. And please pray for America. Pray for Radio Liberty. Pray for our provision and our protection.
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.
John Russell. President Ford has been laid to rest. Correspondent Sagar Magani was there.
A week of mourning on both coasts has ended here in the Midwest. His remains now interred on a hillside just outside his presidential museum here in Grand Rapids. Full military honors at the funeral service.